This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Hi, everyone. You're about to hear such a great charrette. We just want to let you know before we start that around 17 minutes, there were connectivity issues and we lost a few minutes of our interview's audio. Sorry about that. Other than that, you're in for a really interesting conversation, especially if you or someone you know is in grad school. All right, here we go. Hello, and welcome to another episode of She Builds Charrettes.
As a reminder, in these charrettes, we talk more about certain topics, make major announcements, conduct interviews. Basically, She Builds Charrettes is our playground for things outside of our typical format.
Today, we have a unique charrette headed your way. We are joined by Regina Gray, the director of the Affordable Housing Research and Technology Division in the Office of Policy, Development, and Research, PDNR, at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Since joining HUD in 2000, Regina's research activities have focused on sustainable development, urban design and land use planning, transit-oriented development, energy and green building practices, and affordable housing preservation. Beyond her work at HUD, Regina collaborates with other federal agencies on a host of sustainability initiatives and is actively involved in these interagency efforts. Regina earned a Bachelor's of Arts in Political Science from Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, a Master's of Arts from George Washington University in Washington, D.C., in Political Science and Public Policy, and a doctorate from the University of Maryland, College Park, in Political Science and Policy Studies.
She's also involved in the 2025 Innovation in Affordable Housing Student Design and Planning Competition. This is an exciting initiative from HUD's Office of Policy, Development, and Research, PDNR. We cannot wait to learn more about this competition, who can join, what are the prizes, all the details. By the end of the charrette, we hope you will be inspired to join the competition. So without further ado, welcome Regina Gray.
Yay! Yay! Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for that great introduction. It's great to hear from you all this evening.
Yeah. We're glad to have you.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
We are so excited to have you with us. And for this conversation. So let's just dive right in. So for the people that don't know, Regina, tell us about HUD and what they do.
Yes. So the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which is located in Washington, D.C., I sit about 15 miles outside of the District of Columbia. And our mission is quite simple. Our mission is to create strong, sustainable, inclusive communities and provide quality, affordable homes for all Americans at all income levels. And we do that by working to break down barriers in the housing market, to bolster the economy and protect the consumers, to expand housing options to all kinds of people who are looking for affordable quality homes. And as part of that, we will also want to build the types of communities that are inclusive and provide a range of transit options and other amenities that make living, easier, quality of life easier for all Americans, and the type of communities that are free from discrimination and from all kinds of barriers. So yeah, our mission is strong, and we continue to strive to achieve those goals in our everyday lives.
It's great. All right. Oh, go ahead, Judy, if you were.
Oh, I was just going to admit that I thought that HUD stood for Houston Urban Development.
Marjorie's a Houstonian, so she is very...
Of course.
So when I first read it, I was like, oh, ladies, someone from Houston is reaching out.
Well, Houston, we have a problem.
No, this is great. I am so glad to learn what HUD stands for. It's even more than I ever imagined.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think the IAH threw you off. That was one of the IAH.
Because that's the airport. The email came in, HUD IAH, and I was like, oh, this is Houston. Yeah. Something's happening at the airport. Excuse my ignorance.
No way.
We all continue learning.
Yes, that's right. We do. Sure. That's what we do here.
Yes. All right, but let's talk about the purpose of this episode. Could you share more details about this competition? What's the goal of it?
Yeah, so the competition is called the Innovation in Affordable Housing Student Design and Planning Competition. This is the 12th year that we have held this competition, and we're very, very excited about this year. So the goals of the competition basically is to bring together young practitioners across a variety of disciplines, really, but guided within the fundamentals of planning, urban planning and engineering and construction. But we also would invite young people in this sense. It would be graduate level students. The competition is only open to graduate level students who are in various disciplines around housing and community development. And that includes real estate. But we've also invited students in various other disciplines, social work and policy and economics and even psychology. I mean, one year we had a team that won the competition. They were all social workers from Rutgers University, in fact. We're very happy. And so the goal is to bring together these young, brilliant students, who will be presented with some type of affordable housing challenge, rather that is putting together plans for an existing development or a brand new development. So it essentially challenges these students to come up with actual plans. Now, these are plans that are going to be put into place, that are going to be implemented, in this case, by a public housing authority. And so we partner with a public housing authority every year to put on the competition. And that housing authority typically designates the site in which the students will develop their plans around. Gotcha. So yeah, that's essentially, you know, the competition is a great competition because in the end, you know, essentially what happens is that there are four student teams that go on to compete against each other in the ultimate awards and presentation ceremony that we typically hold in April at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And it's really cool because it's set up like one of these judge competitions, these singing competitions, right? Where you have, you know, this panel of jurors, and they also represent different disciplines, right? So we usually try to have a planner. We try to have someone in real estate. We try to have someone who's an expert in sustainable issues or energy related issues and so on and so forth. And so these four student teams that have gone on to compete against one another, they actually get prizes. And this year, you know, we're going to be upping the awards, the cash awards. So we're really excited about that this year. But we'll as we go along this evening and you ask me questions, I'll get deeper into this. I don't want to give all everything away too soon.
That's okay. Okay, so... just to be clear, so each team is made up of four students maximum?
So the competition, let me step back, is open to colleges and universities across the country, right?
Okay.
And so what happens is we have these students who will form their own teams. The teams can comprise, it could be anywhere between 3 and 5 students. Right.
Okay.
And the idea, again, is that each one of these students represent a different discipline. Right. Because you have to bring in the varying perspectives. You got to have someone who's strong on real estate. Right. And you have to have somebody who's strong on design. Obviously, it's a design competition. Right. And it's affordable housing design. So it'd be good to get someone in there that has some housing finance background or someone who's like, you know, really good at design and planning. If you're a smart team, if you're good team to put together these students, you try to have a team that represents all of these different areas of focus in the planning universe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're mostly interdisciplinary, it sounds like.
They're all interdisciplinary, right?
Except that 1 year that the social workers...
1 year that just happens. Yeah, they just did such an excellent job. But so here's what happened. So earlier in the year, in the semester year, so the students will form themselves and typically will designate a faculty advisor. Right. Mm-hmm. And then so the faculty advisor and the team will guide each other in developing preliminary plans in which gets submitted. And the jury that is chosen at the time, they review these plans. And so we could receive anywhere between 30 and 45, you know, plans from these teams that have formed. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we got to get that number down to 4 finalists. Teams.
Right? I see. 4 finalists.
And so the juror's responsibility is to deliberate and essentially discuss these preliminary proposals, right? This isn't a blind review. So we're not in a situation where you're picking your favorite school, Houston. Mm-hmm. All right. we're actually trying to be unbiased here. And so once the jurors have decided on the final four, the teams that have been designated as the final four will then travel to the site. In this case, we're working with a housing authority in West Palm Beach, Florida. Jessica, near where you are.
Hey.
And this will be a new development. It's about 13.7 acres of land that this multifamily development sits on, or is it situated on. And so those teams will then travel sometime in March. mid-March to the site, and they will learn more about the site. They will learn more about the neighborhood within which the site is situated, and they will learn about the goals that the housing authority has for this particular development. And typically, it's a site that requires a lot of retrofit, you know, a fair amount of retrofitting and redevelopment and design. Hence the name of the competition. It's affordable housing design. So the goal here is for these four teams to compete to see which team comes up with the best design. Right. And so they're giving a number of parameters within which to work from. And those guidelines we can talk about. I know that's one of the questions, but I'll hold off until we get there.
I was just about to say, because you kind of touched on it, that you would get 35 to 45 different proposals. So I was going to ask, what are the deliverables that the students have, or like an overview of what they need to provide?
Yeah. So what typically happens is that Jill, who's with us, she will work with the designated housing authority, who, again, we are partnering with. And they will establish, or that housing authority will establish, some guidelines for the students, right, to follow. And it would specifically any information that they think will be useful for the students to know. And this can range from annual plans to long range, quality, what do you call them? QAPs, or qualified allocation plans that every state has. I mean, anything that they think will help the students in developing their design. So they're given like design pro forma, sketches of the site. So any of the any type of requirements, or even like land use requirements that they need to be concerned about. If they're working with a private builder, information as much as they can, not all of it, but as much as information that they can provide regarding the construction of the site and the details of the construction, right? How many units there are, right? What's the floor area? What's the, statistics about the neighborhood, the surrounding neighborhood? All of those important considerations when you're trying to put together a site plan, right?
And then what do the students need to give? Like, what are the deliverables of the competition?
Like a report, a schematic design, or a preliminary design?
Yeah, in terms of, are there specifics in terms of like site plan, preliminary floor plans, that
Correct.
Kind of thing?
So they would provide essentially two main deliverables, essentially. The first is that they will develop they'll give their site plan a name, some kind of fancy title, right? That sort of captures the essence of the neighborhood or the essence of the development, right? You know, this is where they start to get creative and put together some thinking, they put their ingenuity to test, essentially. And they will I think they're required to hand over about four sketches of this site, or a couple of sketches of this site, right? There, again, there, guidelines depend on the housing authority and whatever the requirements the housing authority gives to them. But typically they have to be mindful of four different areas of focus. The sustainability part, which is anything dealing with the environment. It could be related to energy. It could be related to disaster preparedness or resilience, right? Down to the type of materials that are used in the development, right? So anything related to sustainability or resiliency, right? So that's one area of focus. Another area of focus is the housing finance piece, or the public finance piece, right? That's why I said these are, remember, these are interdisciplinary teams, right? So If it's a good team, they're going to have somebody on that team that is really good at housing finance or some type of real estate economics, if you will. Right. So that's another thing. This is affordable housing. So whatever they come up with, it has to be affordable. Okay. And then, so then there's a social or cultural dimension that they have to ensure that they are adhering to. So what are
Do you all still hear me?
Yes.
Something happened.
The sound changed, but we can still hear you.
Okay. If you can still hear
That's
me.
That's better.
Yeah. Great. Sounds like before.
Great. So I'll just pick up where I left off. So essentially, the fourth area is like the social or cultural context that they have to, that students need to be cognizant of. What type of community is it? I mean, we had a few years ago, we were working with Santa Fe, and that community is very much sort of like a farming the community that we were sort of looking at the housing for migrant workers and farming and just like smaller families, very sort of tight knit family structure. And so that's going to matter, right? It's going to be different in Florida. Right. So, you know, in Florida, we have to be mindful that we're having more recurring, you know, climate issues or disaster events, right? So like, what does that look like? The construction materials will be a bit different than they would be in sort of more arid climates, right? In climates that are different. So students have to take all of this into consideration, as well as the cultural traditions of a community. That's also very important.
So. Yeah. Similar to real world projects, essentially, you know?
Yes.
So tell us how much is the cash prize?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. See, we caught that. That's the best part.
we heard that.
So I'll step back. And so phase two is the phase where the students have returned from their site visit. And they've taken all of this information that they've gathered at the site visit. And now they get to go back and refine the site plans that they drew up in phase one. Right. So now they're going to go back to those site plans and they're going to revise them and they're going to get really creative and they're going to put together these wonderful final site plans. And they're going to take those site plans and they're going to present them in front of an audience and a live audience and a jury sometime in April. Right. And these four teams that are competing against each other, and now only one can win the whole thing, but everybody gets a prize, right? And so this year we are very, very happy to announce that we have increased the prize this year. And let me make sure I get this right. So the winning team receives $25,000. The runner-up team will receive $15,000. And then the two remaining finalist teams each get $6,000. And then we've done something even more here, whereas we have what's called our top 10. So these are the teams that didn't make the top four. So it would be team 5 to team 10, right? Mm-hmm. Each of those five teams will each receive $1,000 as a thank you. And you basically got, you know, an honorable mention, and those teams, you know, get featured during the during the intermission of the presentations that take place in April. So they're recognized. We even write up in our publications, they get a special feature in our publications. So, so that's something that we're doing different this year and that we have last year, but the increase in the prize, we hope, offers some more incentive for more teams to participate. And so that's our goal, is to get those teams, get that number up, right?
I would like to enroll in grad school immediately.
Yeah.
Facility.
I mean, the cash price is great, but also the exposure, right? Like, you're meeting a lot of people.
Yes.
The opportunity to create a team that's this cross-disciplinary. Exactly. You don't get, well, the three of us went to Syracuse and we didn't get much of that.
Yeah.
Which I think that's why you said it's so close to the real world, because I think that's something that we didn't realize while we were in school was this collaboration that you do across multiple entities. So,
and I will tell you, it's important, and it is important because, you know, the students put so much work into this. I mean, very much. I mean, they take it seriously. And then the other thing is, you know, we're honored to hear that, you know, students have gotten jobs from this competition. I mean, it looks good on their vitas, right? I mean, we've hired, I think we've hired one person, at least one person who was involved in the competition. And, you know, we're hearing good things all over the country about what this competition has done, you know, to help young practitioners and develop them in their career. So we're very, very proud of that. And we want to keep that going. Future.
Yeah. And I love too the top 10, like you said, because I feel like sometimes only the winner sort of gets the recognition and that kind of thing. But obviously there's great proposals that come through into competitions like this. And so to highlight more of the submissions, I think is great.
Yeah.
So,
and the last good thing about this is that we encourage universities and colleges who are entering to give students credit. Semester credit or if they're on the quarter system, the same thing, because I mean, this is a lot of hard work. And so we do encourage the universities, the students to receive some credit for this, you know, course credit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So if someone's looking to apply, where can they find more details about the competition? And we'll link this in our show notes as well.
Yes. So let me just make sure I get the right URL. To find all of the details about this competition, this great competition, we invite everybody to head over to HUD's official page. This is, I'll spell it out for you. It's HUD. It's all one word, HUD user, HUDUSER, HUDUSER.gov. Okay. And so when you go over to HUDUSER.gov, there is a search engine at the top, or you might see the competition listed on the side of the page. It's easy to find there. And I can also provide a URL if I can. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. And then we can include it in the show notes of our episode, too. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
OK, so you mentioned that this competition started about 12 years ago, and it's great to see how it's evolved in the past. So is this a competition that is done yearly, and how has it changed from year to year? I mean, we heard about the cash money prizes from this year and last year, but how else has it evolved?
Yes, we're very proud, as I said before. So this is the 12th year, and we never imagined that we would, it could keep going this far. It actually started out as a very small idea that we had, and it wasn't really under me. It was a colleague of mine who was a planner. She said, hey, you know, there's other competitions. We really should sponsor a student competition and really try to move the ball forward in the planning and housing, with a planning and housing focus. And I think with a specific view on design and what constitute good housing design for all types or all kinds of people who need, who have different needs, really. And I think that the competition has evolved because we're getting much more exposure, much more interest. I also think it has evolved because we've been trying, especially in the last few years, to do more outreach, to travel around the country, to go and meet with programs all over. And we've tried to do that. And we've tried to also expand our outreach to historically Black colleges and universities and Hispanic serving institutions and other types of colleges and universities that may not, you know, may not have heard of us and may not have, we may not be able to get the word out as much as we want to, especially when we're talking about smaller colleges. And so it has evolved in that way that we're doing much more on outreach, and we continue to work and find new ways, new and creative ways to expand the outreach and get people, get universities, get students interested in what we're doing, because we do think that this is a great competition and we're very proud of it.
Has it always been in different locations every year?
Yes. In fact, yes. And I will say that we have developed a retrospective in which we have gone back to the earliest competitions to see how those developments have come. So, in fact, we do know of at least two ribbon cutting ceremonies that have happened where we've actually in New Jersey, which was the very first competition that we held in New Jersey, in southern New Jersey. They actually completed the project, and it's a veteran housing for veterans. And then outside of New Orleans, Louisiana, which was the second year of the competition, the focus was on senior housing. And they did complete that project and incorporated a lot of the designs that the students had come up with. So we're very happy, and we're going to continue to follow the efforts of these developments as the years go by, and just see how they've, how these developments have come to fruition based on what the students have designed. So again, this is a real world housing challenge, and this is this real site plan that actually gets implemented into real life. So the students, I'm sure they go back and they see that, hey, I had a hand in putting this project together. I had a hand in that design. I did something worthwhile. And like I said, it really does help students who are looking for jobs and, who are involved. They get to say how they've made a difference. And that's important.
Please
that is
tell
so
us
amazing.
That, yes. Please tell us it's accessible to the public, that we can have a link to see
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Okay. Cause yes. I got to see it.
Yes, for sure. I do that.
That was my next question. I was going to ask. So on your website, are we able to see how the competition started, how it, for example, for that very first one, are we able to see this information that you've gathered, the competition, the entries, and what is built now and all these things?
Yes. Not only will you be able to see past competitions, there's a link when you get on the main page, there's a link off to the right that says past past competitions, and you'd be able to not only will you be able to see the pre-site and sort of what's transpired from there, but you will also be able to see all of the designs, at least with respect to the first, to the finalists. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're all there, but you should be able to see the site plans for all four finalists. You will also be able to see our write-ups. We write up case studies, we write up press releases, we write up stories. And then, of course, our retrospective, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, is there too. So if you want sort of a nice recap of what's transpired over the last dozen years, that site is a great site, and we're always working to update it and to make it even better for students if they are looking for resources and information that will be useful for them.
I'm shaking my head because I'm about to spend a lot of time. Mm-hmm. A lot of time will be invested.
Yeah.
I'm the most history research junkie out of the three of us. So
she goes into deep dives.
I was just going to say she's about to go
dive
into this real deep.
Fantastic. Real deep. Great. I love it.
If I have any questions, Regina, can I reach out to you?
You sure can. Absolutely.
Ooh, Regina, you don't know what you've started.
Yeah.
So what we are 12 years in, what are your hopes as this competition continues to grow? Where do you see this going?
In the next 12 years.
Oh, I'm hoping that we can expand the competition even more, maybe have an additional competition where we're not just focused on public housing, but perhaps we're focusing on looking at, you know, non-public housing or maybe even the single family arena. I could see this competition going in another number of places. I could see some offshoots of the competition where we just, where we have an undergrad, competition just for undergraduate students, or a competition where you have, where the focus is on developing public-private partnerships in affordable housing, because we can't do anything without the private sector. And so, yes, I can see this competition being going in different ways. But the number one goal, I think, for me, and maybe I speak for my colleagues in a way, I hope I do, is just to keep expanding our reach and doing more recruiting and outreach and getting the word out as much as we can, and putting more resources towards that in the short run.
Okay. So speaking of resources and other programming, what are other programs outside of the competition that everyday people or other students can participate in or should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, for students, we are aware of other design competitions. The Urban Land Institute has a design competition. It's called the Hines, that's H-I-N-E-S, the Hines Student Competition. And this competition is really good. I mean, it invites undergraduate students to apply, but it focuses on real estate and urban development. And it's more sort of locally based, whereas I think ours is sort of nationally based. I think they focus more so on sort of what local governments are doing, local universities. I think it's much more of an undergraduate focus, but it's a great, great competition. If students are looking to make sort of like a hands-on impact in the community, there's programs like AmeriCorps, which partners with local housing authorities and nonprofits to address housing and community development issues. I think that the AmeriCorps program is a great program. I also think that your local public housing authorities, they often have like volunteer programs or internships that students or anyone who's interested can check into and look into. I think it's about finding passions, what your passions are, and sort of connecting those with opportunities. For students, we do have internship opportunities, and now is the time to really start looking into that. And usajobs.gov is a great place to start for students who are looking just for opportunities to work in government and to at least get some experience as interns. Now's the time to start looking into this now, because at the summer internships, I think we're starting soon. So now's the time to start looking for that.
That is very true.
Yep.
Note to students.
Well, we've learned a lot. That's for sure. And thank you so much for coming.
HUD is not a Houston thing.
Yeah, number one. But at the end of every charrette, when we do an interview, we like to ask the guest.
Actually, I want to ask one more thing.
Okay.
I'm sneaking in. Because I just remembered in one of the emails that we were exchanging about this competition, I read that this competition is put together by an all-woman team. Is that still the case?
Yeah, that is the case. That is definitely the case. Yes.
Where about that? Can you give a shout out to your team?
I would love to, because they are the best. We couldn't do any of this. This competition could not happen without these great people. And first of all, I want to shout out Jill Mackinich, who's joined us. She's in listening mode. She does everything for us. I mean, she is just, she's just amazing. And so I want to shout out to her. And I also want to shout out to Jagruti Reiki, who is manages the competition every year. She is just, she's my right hand lady, if I can say that. And she's just great. And then I want to also recognize Elena Stern, who helps us work through all of our, she's like our creative arm, right? She puts together these great logos every year, and she's just, she's just great. So I am very happy, to have this great team of people of fantastic, wonderful women who I've worked with for many years now. And I couldn't be more honored and pleased to work with this great team that puts on this competition every single year. So
I love that. We couldn't be more honored to highlight all of you today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what we're about. Much. Yes.
Yeah.
This is a great segue for Lizzie.
Yes. So on our charrette episodes where we're doing an interview, we love to ask our guest, who is a caryatid whose career is inspiring you right now? On our tip, on our usual show, we highlight a woman who is alive and working today during the caryatid section of our show, and like to highlight a woman's work. So, Regina, who's a caryatid whose career is inspiring you today?
I had to really think about this, because there's so many just wonderful women who I draw inspiration by. But I will say that I have been in discussions with and collaborations with over the past a couple of months or so, a great thinker, wonderful thinker. Her name is Jody Allen. And she has been doing she's a professor of history. And I don't know if I could give away all of her details, but she has been doing a
please do. Okay.
So she is a professor who is who basically had come to us at one of the courses that I'm co-teaching, and she is a professor, assistant professor of history. And she's overseeing this project called the Lemon Project. It's called A Journey of Reconciliation. And she is, and it's basically how to incorporate, designs of racial healing and reconciliation into projects. It's basically taking sort of all of our experiences, right, across racial lines, and bringing people together through the art of design. I was inspired by her because I think she's is challenging me to think of design in a different way, in a way that I had not thought of. I mean, just taking sort of the cultural context, but also incorporating sort of the historical underpinnings of all of went before in terms of our divisions in society, whether they be race, class, ethnicity, et cetera. And so I hope to see more of that in this competition, where the students are really, it's not just about the design itself, but it's about what the design means and the feelings that the design evokes in this sense, and sort of how we relate to design and the importance of having the historical as well as the cultural importance of those designs coming to life and really bringing out a connection with the people who are going to live in these communities and connect them with the design itself and sort of what that means in terms of, reconciling history, cultural, all of those things that is embedded in a culture or embedded in a cultural tradition. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that.
Yeah. So you said the project that Jody is working on is called the Lemon Project.
Yes.
That's very poetic, between lemons and lemonade and
yes,
lemon card. I get it. And it's so thought provoking.
Yes.
I'm very curious to see how.
And I'm sorry, I didn't say, but she's a professor emeritus of history at the University of Pennsylvania. So I think that her work in terms of, again, looking at sort of how we heal from racial, from our past and race, politics and culture, ethnicity, all of those things that are part of our lived experience, right? And how we can come together as a people and reconcile all of that. So,
that is a great project. Caryatid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there links to that you can share with us that we can put on our show notes?
Absolutely. I will do that. And in fact, I will make sure that she's attributed and she's recognized for that. I will definitely send that over to you as well as the other the links to the competition and to the Heinz competition and anything else you'll need.
Thank you.
Excellent.
You're welcome.
Well, this was great. So students, graduate students, you guys know where to go. Y'all, I'm telling you, if I just could figure out which grad school to accept me quick enough so that I could and assemble a team, I would so totally do it. It sounds like such a great opportunity.
Yes.
There is next year. It sounds like a great opportunity. On our show, we've talked about some of our ladies that have done similar competitions like these that have won and have built got their designs built and how jealous we were of that. But this project this competition also seems worthwhile. So, listeners, you got to check it out. And you got to check out our show notes to get all the details as well. But we'll have links to everything.
Regina, we'd love to have you back next year earlier when the competition kicks off.
Let's do it.
And you can share information about that specific one.
Yes, let's do it. And I will also leave deadlines. I know that was one of the questions that you all have.
Oh,
so
yes.
I will make sure that you have access to a schedule, so you'll know when the award ceremony is, and perhaps you can join us or telecast it or whatever.
We'd love that.
We are there.
Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a plan.
Well, yeah, let's leave on that note. What is the next major deadline that the students can't miss?
The deadline for all of your teams to be finalized, if you're putting together a team, the deadline is noon Eastern Standard Time, January 15th. 15, January 15th, 2025.
Got it.
Great.
All right. Well, Regina, thank you so much for spending your time with us. We can't wait to continue to follow this competition and just to see where it continues to go. We're very excited about this. Thank you for sharing it with us.
You bet. Yes. I'm honored. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.